Good morning, everybody. Thanks so much for your patience. We're going to go ahead and get started. Thanks for joining us for one of the first management presentations of the day. My name is Barbara Novarini, and I'm an equity analyst on the industrials team here at Morningstar. This year, we're pleased to welcome back General Electric, whose formidable, diversified portfolio of businesses exhibits many of the characteristics we've come to expect from a wide moat company. Undoubtedly, an entire century's worth of operating history is a strong testament to the staying power of an economic moat. Today, we welcome Russell Stokes, SVP and CEO of GE Transportation, which is best known for its diesel and electric power locomotives. Today, we'll hear more about how this nearly $6 billion division is at the forefront of what GE calls the industrial internet, as the firm continues to reposition its portfolio as a leader in industrial infrastructure. Altogether, Russell has spent 16 years with GE, holding numerous sourcing, strategy, and financial roles in GE's aviation and lighting businesses prior to assuming the helm of GE Transportation. And with that, I'll hand it over to Russell. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having us this morning. I wanted to just start with a little background on who we are as GE Transportation. This is one of the legacy businesses of the General Electric Corporation that you heard. I've had the opportunity to be in another one as well with GE Lighting. But GE Transportation started, it's been about 100 years ago. We moved to Erie, Pennsylvania back about 1910. We moved our headquarters about 2 years ago to Chicago, Illinois. Locomotive headquarters still resides in Erie, Pennsylvania, though. We operate in over 40 different countries around the globe. 12,000 employees. In those different locations. At the end of 2013, we reported $6 billion in revenues globally across all the different business units, and 46% of those revenues were international. You can see we operate in six different industries, and I'll talk about that a little bit on how that works and why those industries all work together under the GE Transportation umbrella. This is the breakout for the business. We actually talk about ourselves in these different segments here. So locomotive and engine adjacencies. We actually take the engine off the locomotive, and I'll show you that in a few moments here. So we actually take vital organs that are designed into the locomotive, and we're able to take them into different markets. We're able to use them like gen sets. We're able to use them in marine applications, but I'll show you that in a moment. But about $2.5 billion of those revenues, 42% of our revenues come from that space. So engine and propulsion controls, 1.2 to 3 megawatt diesel generators. Our mining business is at about $1 billion. So we actually supply from those locomotives the scale, the propulsion system, and we actually then use it as the propulsion system for the large mining trucks. We do a lot with Komatsu and other mining OEMs, but we play in that space. We also have our own OEM equipment business. We acquired two companies about a year ago that actually do mining equipment, and I'll go a little bit more into what we do in that mining space. So that's $1 billion in that area. And then we do $1.9 billion in services. I was actually the leader of the service business prior to moving over to CEO role. $1.9 billion, 32% of our revenues come from this services and software solutions, and that's a space we're really excited about. And you heard the reference to the industrial internet. And why we think this is going to be a really attractive space for us as we go forward. And then lastly, our intelligent transportation solutions business. So signaling exists here. And then we have a number of software solutions tied to fuel and velocity efficiency and driving better outcomes for the railroads. And we can get into that as well. That's about $600 million. So I want to talk a little bit about the environment. I know there's been this is one that's been moving around quite a bit over the last couple months. I think most people have probably seen that coming off of the winter, things were pretty tough for the North American railroads. Velocity was down. Velocity is a measurement of the average speed of trains across the track. It tends to be in the 20 to 25 mile an hour range is what the railroads tend to quote. But velocity was down due to a pretty tough winter. And at the same time, they started seeing an uptick in volume. So carloads were up. You can see right now carloads are up 2.4%. Intermodal traffic is actually up 5.9%. So in total, we're seeing a lift of about 4% there. The thing we pay a lot of attention to is how many locomotives are actually parked at the different railroads. We are actually at parking levels back at the 2007-2008 time frame. So even when you see the GE loco number down at 332, those are really assets that the customers do not plan to use. So we are seeing an uptick in actual orders. and demand for locomotives right now, because the railroads really do not have spare capacity or spare locomotives that are sitting around right now. So it's a really interesting environment. You can see the velocity drop on the right side there. So that was due to congestion, some of the challenges that the railroads were feeling. It's something that we're working with them right now to help them as they look to recover from that and serve their customers. The international markets are mixed, but we feel pretty good, I'd say, as we look out into 2015 and beyond around what that's going to represent. We do have a pretty good footprint globally. We just highlight some of the different segments in terms of what's going on. We have operations in Brazil, so in Latin America. We talked about an order here that we won in South Africa recently. And then we work in the Russia CIS regions with a partner in Kazakhstan. And then Australia is a nice market for us as well. Mining is a more challenging environment right now. So I think those of you in this room obviously would have seen this by now. But we're seeing, you know, CapEx spending since 2012 has been on a pretty significant decline. As they went through the restructure of some of the major mining companies, with iron ore prices being down, with the softness of coal in the U.S. and in some of the global markets, copper prices being down, we're just really seeing a slowdown and have been feeling a slowdown within the mining environment. We pay a lot of attention to when do we think mining is going to come back, what this means for us. The consensus that we're starting to see, if I looked at that chart about 6 months ago, we actually were saying where they were saying, analysts were saying 2016, 2017, 2018 is about 33% on average across that range. We're starting to see it come forward a bit, but it's really starting to say it's going to be in 2016 that the market starts to come back. So we'll be looking for orders to start to come in the 2015 time frame. We have about a 9-month cycle time to go from raw material to the building of a mining truck. We're working with our OEM, so we're paying attention to how those order books are going to play out. And then we are starting to make sure that we have trucks available or components for trucks available should we see short cycle orders in the near term. So we are paying attention to that. Our strategy really hasn't changed in the last several years. So we do remain consistent there, and that's good for us. We like and believe that we win with great technology. There is a laser focus on quality. So we have a commitment to our customers around the globe to make sure that the products that they get from us are reliable, so that they can make sure that their customers as well get reliable service. We invest through the cycles. I'll tell you, and I'll talk in a moment here about what's happening with Tier 4, which is our big locomotive that's coming out here at the beginning of 2015. But there was a lot of concern that as you looked into 2015 and 2016, the railroads were telling us they really had no plans to buy locomotives at all. They were going to work to, in the 2013-2014 timeframe, to take as many locomotives as they could before they got to the emission standards. For those who don't understand what that is, on January 1st, 2015, Tier 4 is a new emission standard that goes in place that basically says you cannot buy, it's an emission standard, it says you cannot buy a new locomotive unless it's Tier 4 compliant. And so what they've been working through with some concerns about being kind of on a first-to-market kind of product, what they were working through was trying to figure out how they could buy in advance of that and then give it a couple years for that product to mature before they had to go buy. And we'll talk about where that's going. But we have a great Tier 4 product. We will be first to market with their Tier 4 product. And we will talk about what that's starting to look like for our order books as we go forward. We continue to globalize the platform. So you saw that mix of international versus domestic revenues. The legacy of the business had been one that was very North American oriented around the Class 1 railroads. But we continue to be focused on being much more relevant in our global market. So we continue to look to globalize. And for us to be global, you have to be global. So we also are working with a lot of our customers as we win orders to make sure that we can establish supply chain capability, labor capability to assemble locomotives in those local markets. So we're doing that in countries like South Africa. We do it in Australia. We're doing it in Kazakhstan. The industrial internet for us is really about outcomes and improving the outcomes for our customers through the acquisition of data tied to the assets that we have on the locomotive, just to give As an example, the Evolution Series locomotive, which is our newest locomotive technology, actually has 80 physical sensors on it, 250 virtual sensors on it. So we monitor continuously those locomotives where we have remote monitoring diagnostic capabilities at those customers to understand the health of that asset and to try to protect our customers and make sure that locomotives are running continuously and completing their missions and getting them in line with what our customers would expect out of their product. But I'll go into that a little bit more, why we're really excited about that. As I mentioned, we did the acquisition of two mining equipment companies in conjunction with what we've already been doing in our off-highway vehicle business. And we just continue to look to try to find ways to be a much more meaningful mining business. And so we're working both on the equipment side and looking at what more we can do with services as a partner to our OEMs and with our own OEM products. And then lastly, you've heard a lot inside of GE around simplification, making sure that we really find ways of reducing bureaucracy in the company, being able to respond to customers faster, and ensuring that the majority of our people are spending more time answering the needs of our customers than working on internal process and things that may slow them down. So it's really about being responsive, being lean, being able to get to market fast with great products and services. And so that's kind of where we focus. And you see, this, Bob, it's really, it allows us to stay nimble and be really decisive through uncertain and volatile times, which we tend to be going through depending on what market you're in. So this is kind of how it all comes together. As I mentioned earlier, we talk about really kind of scaling from the core. So we take the vital components of the locomotive, where we continue to have a pipeline of development and future technologies and capabilities. And then we're able to not just use those in future locomotive launches, but we're also able to take those in a different market. So for mining, as I mentioned, we take the propulsion system, so it's actually the traction motor system from the locomotive, and we're able to scale that and use it in mining trucks. We go typically anywhere from 200 to 400-ton trucks. We're working on a 400-ton truck now. With some other customers, we go down as low as about 100 tons, 150 tons. We actually take the motors, and they go on drill rigs. We take the engine and we put them on platforms, and as I said, they're gen sets in different markets. We use them as generation systems. And we work closely with our distributed power business to take those products to market as well. And then we actually use those same engines. You'll see them in tugboat applications like the Panama Canal, where we use those assets there. And then all of this as well, we are always looking at how to make sure we have a healthy service backlog. So you saw on the earlier page, $1.9 billion or $6 billion comes from service revenues. So we pay a lot of attention to how we get smarter around services. A lot of what's being pointed to there is our control system, where we're looking to offer more information off that locomotive so we can be smarter around what's happening during its operation to be able to affect the future design of that asset and the monitoring capability around that asset. But it's really taking those critical components you see there and scaling it into different adjacencies. So there's been a lot of talk around what was going to happen, and I mentioned a couple minutes ago with Tier 4. And I think a lot of people had thought that there really wouldn't be any orders for Tier 4 in 2015 or 16. We announced at the end of the first quarter that we had actually received our very first order for 39 Tier 4 compliant locomotives. We announced at the beginning of the third quarter that we had received orders upwards of 225 locomotives from a 2015-2016 time frame. I'm going to jump down to the bottom here pretty quick because we're announcing this morning that we actually have orders now for over 1,000 Tier 4 locomotives in the 2015-16-17 time frame. So we are really excited about what that represents for us. It says a lot around the health of the locomotive industry, of the railroad industry right now. And the faith that the customers are showing in us to be able to place those orders with us as we go forward. We're continuing to build that backlog for deliveries, as I said, through 2017. So that's really where we're focused. Now, what does it do? So I mentioned it's an emission standard. It's a difference from kind of the standards in place right now, Tier 3. It's a 70% emissions reduction over the Tier 3 asset. So that's going to be a big benefit to the industry. We will maintain fuel efficiency, so it'll be parity around fuel So that'll be good there. We've invested $200 million in the product over the course of the last several years, and we're excited to be bringing it to market. We will actually start to make them in the second quarter of next year, and we expect the first one to come off the line in July of 2015 as we're working at it across the board there. So we'll be working through both of getting those out to market here pretty soon. But it's an exciting time right now for locomotives. And we're working to make sure that we're connecting with customers and understanding what their needs are going to be, and taking a hard look at where capacity is going to be as we go forward with this. But, as I mentioned, we are also then focusing on how do we continue to win in global markets and how do we remain competitive in global markets. And I talked about being local in order for us to be global. We talk about locomotives in different classes. So the Evolution Series locomotive is what we call a heavy haul platform. We talk about them in terms of axle weights and tons per axle. So you see heavy haul, medium weight, and lightweight. We kind of highlight it here by country. A lot of it gets to be infrastructure limitations on where you could take these assets given their weights. So how much weight can the rail actually take? In some markets, we have to work through how much weight can a bridge take. You get into questions and restrictions around the height of tunnels, if you're working through that as well. So that helps dictate what we need to do in order to be in some of these different markets. So you see the heavy haul locomotive is really in Australia, Brazil, obviously in the U.S. And then we're doing more in Africa with mining customers. I mentioned the localization element. So with partners in Australia, for example, with UGL, 66% of the locomotives we manufacture there are local content, so we can produce them locally. In the middle there, under our medium and lightweight locomotives, it's 20 to 25 ton per axle. It's in China, India. We do have locomotives in Sub-Saharan Africa, and then the MENA region. And as you see with some of our partners like TCD in Turkey, 43% local kind of content. And then the lightweight environment is less than 22 tons per axle. That's Sub-Saharan Africa as well in some spots, Southeast Asia, so Indonesia, Malaysia kind of environments. You can see with PTK in Indonesia, 20% local. So we're always working to try to figure out how, as I said before, we build out the supply chain capability to be able to build more locomotives in country, but just as importantly, to be able to support those locomotives locally so we can ensure they're up and running in the most efficient process. So when we talk about the industrial internet, I'd say we had historically gone to market with a number of disparate solutions, so individual point solutions to our customers, be it to drive velocity improvements. You saw me on the earlier chart, we talked about the average velocity of trains across the system, or as fuel solutions or as asset optimization solutions. And we realized that there was a real value in being able to connect the data and the capability of those solutions together to be able to unlock even greater value for the customers in more of an integrated set of solutions. So we introduced something called Rail Connect 360. It actually, you pull information, looking at pulling information from our customers' IT systems through B2B links, through onboard and wayside assets. So being able to get information from the side of the rail, like things like wheel impact load detection systems to understand the health of wheels on locomotives. And we're able to provide a number of solutions tied to optimization of what we call assets, networks, supply chains, and operations. And then it's all being built on top of this Predix platform. That is a big investment of our software COE out in San Ramon, working with Bill Rue and the teams. This is actually really exciting because we get to share capabilities as well from across the different GE businesses. There's a lot of things that we're trying to solve in terms of optimization and performance of assets and how you monitor assets through sensing technologies. There was the same thing I was doing when I was in our aviation business we're able to do here. So we leverage a lot of those investments through our global research center, as Connecticut, and through our software center out in San Ramon. But to talk about it a little bit, kind of in terms of what that looks like, we actually have a 15,000 locomotive installed base. So we have a significant backlog of contracts that run anywhere from 10 to maximum probably around 20 years. Typically at some sort of rate per day, rate per mile, rate per megawatt hour. And then we service those across somewhere between 78 and 80 shops across the globe. So we're inside of our customer sites maintaining those components. We actually do it in a maintenance management system that is the same software platforms and asset management platform that we use across all those different sites to ensure consistency. But it's really around condition-based maintenance. So understanding the health of asset and component, so we're only having to take things off that really need to be taken off. Providing technical expertise, so we have a couple hundred technical experts that sit with our customers that can diagnose locomotives. We have software that will read the locomotives as they come in, either through a physical download or through a wireless download. It will tell what's wrong with the locomotives, what alerts have gone off over the course of operation. That will then actually be converted into recommendations to what we call RXs that recommend improvements. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I'm sorry. How long did you say was the average?
Average contract length?
Yeah, the average.
About 15 years, I'd say on average.
I'm sorry?
On average, about 15 years.
About 15 years?
Yeah.
And what's the average life, you would say, of your installed base?
A locomotive could probably go about 30 years.
Okay.
We tend to refresh the engine, is really kind of what we look to. The engine comes in for major overhauls about every 7 to 8 years.
Thank you.
No problem. So the RXs that I mentioned are tied to these intelligent work scopes that allow the teams at the shop to execute consistent work scopes across those contracts. We know that we're getting a consistent assessment of what is going on with the health of those assets. And then as I mentioned, we do a lot of our monitoring and diagnostics. So this is the physical kind of asset optimization portion of what it is we're doing inside of Broken Eye. But then we also get to bring some additional software solutions that we've been spending a lot of time on. I'll talk to a couple of them. In the center here, network management is really a software platform that tries to look at the optimization of how you move trains across a network. So understanding meet paths of different trains. We actually have a customer that will tell you, and you'll probably see it get announced here at one of the analyst meetings or railroads, and I think the coming week or two. But 1 mile an hour improvement in velocity, so you saw me show that earlier, their quoting is being worth $200 million a year to them. So this software platform allows them to be able to optimize how they manage the dispatching of trains, to understand how you have priority trains that move as they get to different meet pass routes, and be able to optimize some of the management of that network. So we're excited about that as our movement platform. We also have a fuels platform that we call Trip Optimizer. It's basically cruise control for a locomotive. So it looks at, as you go through different terrains, as you're coming into curves, as you're going up different inclines, locomotives move through a series of notches to increase speeds. Like you think of shifting a car through a series of speeds, not typically being the highest. It looks at the optimal notch to be able to manage, to be able to get you where you want to go in the best amount of time, but considering the optimal fuel performance. So the locomotives that actually have Trip Optimizer on them are able to save our customers somewhere in the range of 7 to 15% of fuel, which is a major cost for the railroads. So we're excited about continuing to work with them, and we can keep working on building out that platform. And then as I mentioned on the previous page, we think the combination of what we can do with Movement Planner by understanding the network, we actually map out the topography of the actual railroad itself. So looking at how trains are going to meet each other, pass each other, combined with Trip Optimizer on how do you manage the average speed to be able to get to fuel, and then ensuring that locomotives are healthy so that they don't fail, which would then potentially eat into some of those benefits, allows us to get to the best performance and the optimal set of outcomes for our railroad customers. That's the railroad world, kind of locomotives, and as I said, we're really excited about where that's going. Mining, we're in a tough cycle right now. So our mining, we announced that mining revenues are going to be down about 50%. We think that's pretty much in line with what everybody, our competitors, are seeing out there right now as the mines work to increase productivity and kind of reset where they were in terms of what they were looking to buy. We feel really good, though, still around the long-term prospects of our mining business and the mining industry. We will continue to look at opportunities to build out a more meaningful mining franchise. We're paying a lot of attention around mining solutions, and I'll come to that here in a second on the other side of the page. And as I mentioned, those propulsion systems, so you can see that kind of picture there in the rear of rear wheel set of a big mining truck, along with the control system to be able to manage that, is really how we play in our off-highway vehicle piece. So the objectives for our mining business is continuing to transform with existing technology. So they mentioned kind of those vital components before, looking at how do we improve motors, system integration, advancements in adhesion. So being able to improve attractive effort through the mines so they can actually carry more. And then we're working to improve or demonstrate the ability to use batteries for energy storage business, and then put them into components like that, like our battery-powered shield hauler or the diesel power scooter. I mentioned solutions, so we're able to reach across the different GE businesses to be able to provide solutions to customers. So in this example here, we're able to take a pump from Nova Peony, gear from our Lupkin business. We work with our energy management business on controls out of Digital Energy, combined with engines from the transportation business and accessory rack, and then create a pumping solution for customers that brings together the capabilities across the different GE businesses that none of us would be able to do on our own in support of the mining customers. So we're spending a lot of time looking at opportunities in that space to continue to be able to do more in terms of providing solutions and improving outcomes for the mining customers. So this is where it kind of all comes together. So the outlook here for 2014, as I said, we're working through some tough dynamics with just where mining is right now. But as I said, I feel good about the long-term prospects of where mining is going to be. And then, as we showed, we're seeing a real pickup in the order book for 2015, 16, and 17 on locomotive orders, with 1,000 that we now have securely on order here. So we expect strong shipments out of that as we go forward. And then, you know, on the mining side, we just make sure that we're right-sizing the business and taking the appropriate actions to be healthy during the downturn, and then ready to respond as things go back up. So we're looking at significant actions. We've taken actions around right-sizing the organization and our facilities to be at the right cost structure as we go through this, and to be able to navigate this cycle. But we do expect that we're going to see mining come back in 2015, 2016. Really kind of be the time frame to look for that to come back. And it's said, it's all about creating value for our customers, be it through products or service, and trying to help them optimize their outcomes. But it's an exciting business, and we really like where things are headed here in GE Transportation. So with that, I can open up for any questions anybody can have. Yes?
Could you kind of give an update on the CNG, LNG,
yeah, so I think over the long term, so we're more in the LNG space is really where we're investing. I think there's going to be, there will be a market for LNG locomotives out in the future. We actually are doing a demonstration right now around an LNG locomotive. We have a dual fuel solution that we're working on. That will move towards kind of an 80% displacement ratio of LNG versus diesel. You know, the question will always be on where the spread is going to be between LNG and diesel prices on the economic standpoint. So the technology will work. We actually believe we're doing demonstrations right now with the locomotive, working with customers to prove that the technology is absolutely fine. The question is going to be one around regulatory hurdles. So there's a lot of things that are going on right now tied to crude by rail concerns. There's tanker car questions on what kind of tanker cars would you put them in. Concerns around where exactly might you position the LNG tanker in relation to the locomotive itself. So we're working through that with the regulators to understand how that might work. And then the next question is going to be one around infrastructure. So where would you actually put the LNG systems themselves? How do you actually get fuel to the places that you want to go? Our oil and gas business actually has kind of a LNG, mini LNG stations that we can set up. So they're working with some of the railroad customers to look at that, see if they may want to invest in their own or they may want to do it in terms of some sort of partnership. But that's going to be the two big questions. So we believe the technology will be there. We've committed to the railroads that as they look at this, we will be there with them when the market is ready. It's really going to be a question of regulatory, when does it all get passed as the FRA and everybody else there, and then infrastructure, how is that going to work to be able to supply the LPG. But it will be a very interesting market out in the future.
Would you characterize GE's investment at this point? I mean, I understand there's a lot of uncertainty, but are you sort of cautious about the development of that market, or do you think it's a foregone conclusion? Just if you characterize how GE views that.
Yeah, I think it's a market that's going to happen. I really do think it's a market that's going to happen. It's a question of time. So I would say our position is just trying to make sure that we continue to advance the development of the programs, which is why we're doing the demonstrations now, to make sure that if the market and everything gets approved, that we'll be ready to go when the market is there. But it is a market that I believe is absolutely going to happen at some point in time. Yeah.
Do you have an overall sense of, I guess, the type of transportation that might be a winner in the end game as far as rail, water, road, I mean, as far as transporting energy type products, longer term? I guess I'm trying to, you know, you're on the rail side.
Yeah.
But you know, as I look at, you know, pipelines and, you know, some other environmental concerns,
I think you're going to need some mix of all of them as we go forward. And I think you're going to see probably some that are more of an advantageous position at some point in time than another, just given the ease of how you get them set up. Right now, so you're seeing concerns about the movement of crude by rail. But there's a lot of things that are being done right now to try to ensure the safety around that. So there's questions on, you know, what would be the speeds that will be allowed for crude locomotives. Do you need to let cities know in advance what's actually inside of your cars as you go through the city? So there's some regulations being looked there. We're starting to see, we believe we're seeing a shift though from truck to rail. So we do believe we're seeing an increase, and some of the volumes is being driven by that. I think the pipelines are going to be a necessary form of transportation of those type of products. I really can't predict kind of how those investments are going to come online and how they play out. So I'd say we just continue to make sure that we have products that are ready and support the railroads as they look at kind of how that comes to fruition. That answers the question. Yes?
What about
by coal? You know, so coal, it's hard to predict exactly by, and I don't really have the data, by commodity on what's going to come back. I think the global dynamics are still going to be one where coal is going to be necessary, especially in some of the emerging markets. So not exactly sure kind of by mix on that increase, which commodities have come back. But I do believe that there is going to be a place for coal in terms of energy production as we go forward, at least into the foreseeable future. Answer?
Yeah,
sir. Yes?
Kind of follow up on the mining. Sounds like a new endeavor. I think there are two established players, one independent, one owned by a larger. Just on the mining business. Kind of like it's a new endeavor, and I think there are two established players in the industry. One is independent, one is owned by a much larger player, and I'm just wondering kind of what General Electric's strategy is like and how kind of entering into that market is done and kind of what you see as the competitive dynamics going forward.
So you said, to make sure I understood your question, you're saying that there's two major players kind of in the mining space, and what's our strategy as we enter?
Right.
That's what you're saying.
Right.
So, you know, it's... As we look at it, actually, in the vehicles component that I talked about, so some of those scoops, there's a number of different players that are out there. And we look at those assets by kind of soft rock, which would kind of be in the coal segment, or hard rock. So we're looking at kind of where there might be opportunities there. We are looking in both kind of how we might grow the business out inorganically and organically. So we continue to look there. On the off-highway vehicle piece is where you're kind of saying is kind of the big mining trucks is kind of the two big majors. And so we do have a long-term relationship with Komatsu. We've been with Komatsu for a long time. But we also do sell those systems to some of the other smaller OEMs that are more regionally oriented. So we continue to invest in those places and support those OEMs in those markets too. So right now for us, it's continuing to try to figure out how, at least in that equipment space, we continue to become more meaningful. We actually are in the midst, we announced a joint venture with Komatsu on some different vehicle platforms that we're looking at as well. So we are looking at how we work there. And then we go to market primarily with Komatsu, but we do have a couple other people that we work with in the off-highway vehicle space. It's kind of the strategy. And then it's really, what I'd say is that we invest just like in a locomotive. It's how do you drive better outcomes and better performance of technology you have. So then we're looking at our propulsion system versus our competitors' propulsion system on improving tractive effort. I'm trying to figure out as part of those partnerships, can we improve fuel performance? And then you're trying to figure out the optimal way to be able to increase or manage the optimal tonnage that they want to be able to put into those trucks. So as I mentioned, we're looking at a higher truck class right now from a weight standpoint. But we do invest across those different weight classes, as I was referencing earlier. Yes?
Can you talk a little bit about the drivers to come on that?
Pardon me?
What do you see as the main drivers of the mining combat?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, so if you go look at some of the different data around what happened, the industry, there was a lot of discussion around kind of the boom of mining. Iron ore, copper, you were seeing a lot of, as you looked at some of the different global markets, a real demand for those commodities, as you were seeing greater growth in cities and just the need for those commodities. And some of the mining companies had really gone long. I mean, they were betting that we were going to be in a big super cycle and had gone out there really trying to figure out how far could they go. So they bought a lot of capacities of equipment ahead of, I'd say, some of the demand actually being maybe there, because they saw the demand as being there. And then when it dropped, they've really been in kind of this correction right now. So as iron ore prices dropped down to the 92, 93 range, copper dropped down 310, 320, 330. Coal softness in the U.S. and global softness on coal really was kind of the driver for then everything kind of coming back down. So the return is really going to be a mix of those things. And that's why I was saying I don't know the exact component of how much would be coal versus iron ore versus copper. But the global dynamics of what's going to be needed in countries like China, what's going to be needed in Southeast Asia, the demand and needs in Africa, will say that you will need those commodities. And so, you know, we're looking at kind of what stockpiles might be, what kind of additional capacity or additional demand, excuse me, is going to be needed, supplies that we need to be able to meet the demand that will be out there. But I think it's just going to be a function of eventually you're going to have to really turn those commodities back on in a bigger way, because the long-term components of what's driving it, I don't think are going to change.
Is there, in your software platform, and I know we talked about that network, are you guys playing at all in driverless and kind of long-term infrastructure around vehicle infrastructure on the private passenger vehicle side?
So we have
connected car, driverless, and having that for.
So you're talking transit platforms?
I'm talking about. If we ever go to Google and have it, so far as the driverless car.
Like the Google car kind of thing.
Exactly. Is there a GE going to be a player in infrastructure around that?
We are working with Mines right now on autonomous trucks. So there are demonstrations that are going on right now in Australia around Komatsu driverless trucks. And then we are looking at autonomous train operation, primarily in Australia right now, just given where you can move things on, run through cities. So I think the demonstrations will happen there first. But I do think there's going to be a time where you're going to see autonomous operation of both locomotives and mining trucks. But I think it'll be more in remote mining areas. I don't think you'll see it in the U.S. anytime soon. but technology is one that we're excited about and looking into. Very good.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Okay, well, hey, I really appreciate everybody's time. Thank you for coming out and giving us the opportunity to share with you the things that are going on in GE Transportation. Thank you.